Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Leading Edge Love Radio. This is your host, Sumati Sparks, the Open Relationship Coach at sumatisparks.com. Today I'm really excited about our guest, Ryan Orrick, here to talk about all things open relationship. And Ryan describes himself as a daydreamer who looks at the way things are and imagines how they could be for himself, his community, and the wider world. He's made every mistake you can imagine in relating and has had to create maps to help him connect to others. He's really happy and loves supporting others in easier paths to success than he has had in their journeys of love, intimacy, relating, and sexuality. So I'm really excited to have Ryan on the show today. Welcome, Ryan.
Thank you, Sumati. It's an honor to be here. I appreciate the invitation.
Of course. So, Ryan, I wanted you to be on the show because I was really interested in your story around, I believe you came from a Mormon background and, you know, very religious and very opposite from your lifestyle now. So I wanted to hear a little bit about the journey and how you came to be somebody who practices ethical non-monogamy and how you help other people in their alternative relationship styles. So maybe you could just kind of start at the beginning and we can go on a journey with your life and I'll ask you questions along the way. How does that sound?
Sounds great.
Okay, cool. So tell me about your background and your upbringing.
I love that you called me a Mormon good boy because I forget about that. It seems it's almost receded so far into the distance by this point that I don't realize where I've come from. And every time I tell my story, people say, you were that and you got to this. And then I have to pinch myself and say, oh, yeah, that was me back then. So I forget it. And I appreciate you for reminding me because it was a heck of a journey. And as far as relationships goes and alternatives and ideas that go beyond what we know nowadays, I think I was always into people. I was always very into women. When I was a little boy, I was very interested in girls. And my mom said I had a girlfriend from like first grade onwards. And mm-hmm. what perhaps came out or I didn't know until later was in high school, I found this world of women, I found this world of connection, and I was kind of in love with everybody. And so I had this little stack of letters by my nightstand that I just called my love letters, and they were just from a dozen or more girls. And every night I would write another love letter and mail it off back when we used to have paper and mail things, right? And then they would come back in, and I would just be sort of playing the divine poet with multiple ladies at once. And that felt like the most natural thing in the world for me, right?
Wow.
And as I kept going with that, I was in a very strict LDS Mormon upbringing, strict in terms of 14 before I was allowed to dance, 16 before I was allowed to date, and then only casually. And even though Mormonism has this famous history, which, you know, we can get into that if you want, but that wasn't the branch I was in or the mainstream. Now it was very much about celibacy before marriage, getting married in the sacred temple that they have and being together forever. And that was kind of how it worked. And that was the only model I had.
Mm-hmm.
So if I fast forward a little bit, to when I was on my mission, I started working with a lot of people. So the mission is the Mormon experience where you're 19. I was sent to Germany, so I was living in Germany, learning German, and I was looking at how the church was working there, how the relationships were working there, and I heard the statistic that there were 3 single Mormon active women in the church for every 1 man. And,
wow.
And basically the response to the and the response of the church from that was, you know, if you're righteous, you know, in the next life, when you go to heaven, you may be able to have love and connection and get married because the Mormons believed in a marriage after life as well, right? But
right.
I thought,
and just to interrupt
really
you, just to interrupt you for a second, I know Mormons often have the reputation of practicing polygamy, but that's just a small sect. So where you were in Germany, that was not the case. Is that correct?
Yeah, right. So there was none of that going on, but it's in the dark prehistory of the church. 100 years ago, that was normal in the mainstream, or 120 years ago. And so I started thinking, I started connecting dots. I started thinking, well, you know, back then God said, because that was the belief, they can marry multiple wives, and now there's all these excess women, so to speak. I was trying to figure out how to put together a map of open relating or something that worked for me based on the only model I had, which was the history of my religion, if that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. So from there, I was thinking about that. I was wondering about that. There was no real way to implement that. And so I found I was 21. I was a virgin. I was sort of connected to platonically several women, but I started to get closer to one particularly. And for a number of reasons, we got engaged and then we got married. And right when we got engaged, I felt like it was wrong to even, you know, write emails to or have lunch with or meet with any other women. I had this attitude of, you know, we have to avoid temptation. We have to be good and keep the commandments as I understood them. And so at that point, I cut off relationships with everyone else, or they mm-hmm. did too, because it just wasn't seeming right to be able to do that. But when I did that, I felt like a part of me died. I felt like something wasn't true in that for myself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
yeah, so I'm hearing that even
that,
from your,
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I'm hearing that even from a young age as a child, you had lots of girlfriends, and then you were trying to figure out a way to include all these excess women in your church. And then when you tried to be a quote good boy and follow the rules, it just felt like it didn't resonate with who you were from the beginning.
Yeah, but I had no map, I had no instructions, I didn't know what to do. And add to that the fact that my wife and I had really very poor communication, poor understanding of sexuality. I got married as a virgin. We had no idea what was going on. And the only people that I felt like it was appropriate to talk to was my local religious leader, who happened to be my brother-in-law, so I sure as heck wasn't doing that. So basically, there was a lot of suffering and silence on a sexual level after that.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Right.
And so
then how long?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say,
how long did you
end up staying married to this person?
Our divorce was finalized one day before what would have been our 10th anniversary.
Oh, well, you hung in there for a while.
I did. And for years, we were a sexless marriage. It was like living brother and sister. She would take care of the home. She didn't work. She was at home cooking and cleaning, and that's what she wanted to do at the time, and I was out earning the money. And this, we just kind of suffered in silence, which is sad to think about now.
Well, and that's what I hear from a lot of my clients who are in long-term marriages, where after 15, 20 plus years of being together, they are more like best friends, and the romance has died because they're trying to follow this programming, this rule that they learned that you can only be with one person and it means all these things if you're not. And so it sounds like you had that experience really young and got that out of the way.
Yeah. And it was years of just thinking this is the way that it needs to be. And there's no way to solve it. And this is even God's will. And then one day I took a look at it all and thought, well, this can't be it. This can't be all there is for life and me and my experiences and my connections. I need to find something else. And so I ended up leaving that entire community.
And leaving the church?
Yeah, I left the church. It was one of the biggest, most dramatic experiences of my life. Imagine losing 90% of your friends or 99% of them overnight. All of a sudden you have no map for your existence. It was really traumatic. It was really difficult. And I understand why people don't want to do it or, you know, or find themselves unable to do it in the situation that I was in.
It really has to get bad enough for you to go off on your own like that with no map.
Yeah. You have to risk, I guess, number one is going to hell was the first thing that was going through my mind. What if they are right and I should be listening to this group for my instruction? And then you kind of have to deal with that. And then you have to deal with now I feel like an Amish person almost, different group, but like I haven't been in the real world. Now what happens?
Right. And so have you ever thought about that it kind of feels similar to a cult survivor?
I mean, I personally would say people don't like this, maybe some people, but I would say Mormonism is a rather gentle cult. But yeah, I would put it exactly in that category.
Because I'm sure there was a lot of pressure for you to stay.
Tremendous. Well, one issue was I had quickly risen the ranks in the Mormon church. They have a lot of lay leadership. And I was in the position of a branch president or a bishop at the age of 24 till 27, which is very unusual to get that type of responsibility when you're so young. I was in charge of 100 people, and I was making the decisions about who would speak and who would fulfill what callings. And then from that position, I took a trip to America, and then shortly after that, I left. So when I left, it was like a bomb dropping in the local church.
Wow. Huh. Okay. Well, let's stay in. I'd really love to hear about, how it is now, but let's stay in some sort of chronological order here. So what did you came back to the United States after that?
Not yet. After that, I was living in Dresden, Germany. One of the things I wanted to do that I didn't feel I was able to in my marriage was kind of explore the big wide world. So I moved from a city of 100,000 people to one of 200,000. Then I moved to a city of 500,000 and just started exploring all the things that I'd wanted to do, from African djembe to looking at sex and relationships. And one day, and I was trying to find, my theory was I've never had any training about sexuality and relationships. I bet I could be better at that. And I don't know where to go for it. How do I find it? And is it appropriate ever to have a sexual, romantic, intimate connection with more than one person? So as I was looking for the answers to those questions, I found the ZEG, the Center for Experimental Community, which is in Germany. It's in Berlin. It wasn't that far away from where I was. And they had an introductory workshop into ethical non-monogamy. And just as I was contemplating signing up for that, Just as I was contemplating signing up for that, I saw another ad, and it said, John Hawken, world famous tantra teacher, is in Dresden for 1 weekend only for a special workshop, and it was the exact same weekend. And so in some ways that felt like a bit of a crossroads. I could only do one of them, and I ended up going to this tantra workshop. And as soon as I stepped into this tantra workshop and started hearing the ideas, the first one was there's a masculine and a feminine principle, and the masculine is consciousness and the feminine is energy, and their dance is that which constitutes the universe. I felt like I was home.
Wow. I just feel like it was fate for you to find the ZEG community, which I love, and I'm really into the technology they created for community connection called the ZEG Forum. I'm really involved in that here in Northern California. So I love hearing you say that you landed there. What year was that?
This was 2008.
Okay. And then you chose to go to this Tantra workshop, and you were thinking about how to have multiple relationships, which most people wouldn't even be thinking about that because they would just feel like it wasn't even an option until they maybe met somebody who practiced it or read a book or something. And you were just thinking of it on your own, which points to the fact that you're kind of wired that way, would you say?
Yeah, like I said, even when I was married, I never actually acted on it, but I would find myself falling in love. And I guess it'd be important to define, when we talk about polyamory, there's eros, there's agape, there's philia, but, you know, there's emotional connection, there's sexual attraction, there's all different types of love. But I certainly was diving into various types of love, in from my perspective, all the time with lots of people. And so these feelings would come up, and I would find in that structure I wasn't able to act on them. And once I let go of the entire upbringing that I had and said, okay, I'm starting from scratch, I get to do what I want, more or less, within our society, what would I like to do? The concept that that was possible, it was in fact one of the things I think that collapsed my marriage, or one of the decisions that was the beginning of the end, was deciding, you know what, I would like to have 3 or 4 lovers. I think that would be awesome. How do I do that? And that was really, I remember where I was standing. I remember like the weather that day, standing in Jena, Germany, and making that decision. I want 4 people to love me. I want 4 lovers or women. And then thinking, how do I do that? And then seeing really quickly, well, that's not possible where you are now. And I feel like that decision led me down that path to start exploring these things.
Wow. Okay, so then you did the Tantra weekend, and then when did you first meet a new lover after your marriage?
Well, it was funny because after I left my marriage, I was clueless. I was incredibly, I'd never been to a bar or a singles bar, never had alcohol, never drank coffee. I mean, I was pretty, you know, pure and innocent as far as that all goes. And so I thought, okay, now I'm free. Now what do I do? But then I said, wait a second. I have no idea about how to meet people outside of the church, because every woman I've ever dated, I've met at a church function or, you know, met her at church. So now what do I do? So what I did was, you may be familiar with the whole sort of pickup artist community.
Yes.
And what I did was, yeah, I started studying, okay, how do you speak to women? Or in public, or at a party, how do you invite them to spend time with you? How do you escalate? How do you kiss somebody? How do you invite someone to the bedroom? How does that all work? And I seriously practiced all of that. I listened to dozens of DVDs and MP3s and CDs and read books. And I had that practice for about, I think it was around 18 months. From the time I first started. And I also got a mentor, a friend of mine. He was just kind of a natural Casanova, an incredible guy. And the problem with a natural is they can't tell you what they're doing. But if you watch mm-hmm. them, you can see what makes them good at what they do. So mm-hmm. combined with these 2 things, it took me about 18 months to learn how to talk to women and to start having success after I separated from my wife.
So you really have a strong desire to learn, very eager to understand systems. So the pickup artist stuff kind of has a bad rep. So were you learning about these kind of underhanded ways to trick women, or do you feel like what you found was a little bit more, had more integrity?
Absolutely, on the reputation, and there's a lot of things in there that are kind of, yeah, less than classy, totally. But I didn't know where else to go. I didn't know where else to find information. And so I was into, you know, I was looking for everything I could. And then I tried to, I hope, pick the things that were most reputable, because it certainly wasn't my, you know, I don't know how what the goals the other people have, but just having the goal to get a woman into bed becomes very shallow. After you can do it a while, you realize there's more to go for.
Right.
So yeah, there's parts of it that, you know, are definitely not good. And there's parts of it that are just normal human relations, you know, how to have small talk mm-hmm. with someone, how to talk to someone. And I kind of needed a lot of even the basics of sort of being human in terms of being out in the world and dating, because I really didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you for that. That makes sense. If that's what fell in your lap, you had to follow through with it.
Well, you know, who offers you, you know, what clueless men learn how to talk to women. Now, the people who are marketing it well, those are the people that you see first, or at least I did. I mean, this was almost a decade ago now, right? But yeah, so as soon as that started happening, I got comfortable talking to women and even getting in bed with women. And it was right after that that I said, okay, I'm going to bed, but I have no idea what to do once I get there. Let's get some education. And then I started Tantra.
I caught one. Now what do I do with her?
Yeah, exactly. You know, there has to be more. And that's when I started Tantra, and then that's where I started practicing on all sorts of levels.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. And so then when did you actually get into a relationship with somebody else who was open to having a non-monogamous situation with you?
This is a fun and terribly tragic story, actually. So that summer, the summer of 2008, once I sort of learned the art of, actually a lot of it's about confidence. Let's just call it being confident with women. So I had the confidence, and then I learned a few tantric skills. We're breathing, we're making love for a lot longer amounts of time, we're experiencing alternate states, and special stuff is happening. But I went through a number of partners that summer. And at some point, I hit that wall where I thought, okay, it's not just about anybody, and it's not just about having more partners. I want something deeper. And so I remember talking to my guru at the time, and we were sitting at the table with his girlfriend, and I said, why am I not finding the relationship that I want? Because I want something deeper. And his girlfriend said something about, well, when you love yourself, then that will work out. Other people will find you and love you. And that really dove in deep. I thought, okay, how am I not loving myself? And then the next question was, what is loving myself? How would that even look? How would that work? And shortly after that, I met a woman, and we seemed to resonate quite strongly. And something in me felt like, no, don't go there. Don't dive in with her. But I kind of went there because I was feeling something. And we got into a deeper and deeper relationship. And then we had a conversation. I said, well, you know, I'm into this being open, and how would that be for you? And she was one of the first people who said, oh, yeah, that's no problem. And so with her, I dove in deeper in the expectation that we would be able to experiment and play in that level.
Mm-hmm. And then how did that end up?
And
tragic,
I'll just continue.
Tragedy.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, and so what happened was, for a lot of reasons, we met and actually ended up getting married about 2 months later. And I saw that whole marriage as kind of a tantric experiment. I thought, well, if it doesn't work, it doesn't. We were in Vegas. My dad was in Vegas. We were on vacation, and there was some tax stuff. It was kind of crazy. Anyway, so we dove into this relationship, and I thought, okay, this is going to be a fun little experiment and relationship. And as soon as we got married, this super confident 40-year-old woman who'd never lived with a man before and was now my wife, all of a sudden all of this fear and insecurity and all of this other stuff came out, or at least was evident to me. And all of this stuff started playing out immediately, to the point where it basically fell apart instantly, as far as I could tell, just through this legal action.
Yeah, that does happen a lot, where when people get married, all these expectations come up because of that label, and all of the projections from their family or their unmet needs from their parents. Some people say getting married is like living together but with appliances, but I don't think that's true. I think that when people get married, all that stuff comes up. It's so often that happens. So how did you manage to work through that with her?
Well, I agree with you 100,000%, and that's something I talk about now, is how our labels and cultural baggage affects what we do, even if we pretend to do it differently, or even if we have the intent to do things more consciously, still it all comes mm-hmm. with us, as well as the legal structures. You know, when you got married, at least when I got married, all of a sudden there was this, it's like there's this giant rock that your partner gets that they can hit you with, threats. You know, I didn't have children with either partner, so that was never an issue to be resolved. But the financial things and the responsibilities connected to that, it all of a sudden gets very serious. What used to be playful and fun, and there's a lot of places where you can fall down in it. At least that was my experience, even if you're trying to do things differently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, we were together. We tried to get things working and tried to get some resolution, but really it just seemed to go from bad to worse. She basically went back home. I was living in Vienna at the time. She went back to Dresden, where she was from, and then came back and basically said, I want to end this. And I said, well, I'd like to work on it. And she said, well, if you don't end this, you know, then she came up with some consequences that were legal and financial, and I thought, okay, well, she's serious about this. And so the whole thing ended up lasting 13 months. And the interesting thing that happened, yeah. And the interesting thing that ended up happening after is because she had almost nowhere else to stay, we ended up living together for another, I think it was almost a year. We were together in the same apartment, having been exes, and yeah, that was a crazy experience that I kind of got stuck into and taught me a lot, but was also incredibly painful, and that's kind of where the tragedy comes, at least as far as my emotional state around it all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to ask you some of the lessons you learned about open relationship from that relationship. But before I do, I just want to say, in case anyone's just joining us, you're listening to Leading Edge Love Radio, and this is your host, Sumati Sparks, the Open Relationship Coach at sumatisparks.com. And we're speaking with daydreamer and systems creator, Ryan Orrick, telling us his story going from the Mormon church into somebody who lives an open relationship lifestyle and coaches other people as well. So why don't you share with us some of the lessons you learned from that relationship, and you can also move a little faster forward and tell us about some of the lessons you learned from the relationships after that as well.
All right. And I love that you're talking about systems, because that's been one way. I feel like I'm a little bit autistic about all this, and so it's been useful for me to create systems to help myself understand relationships, and then other people have found them useful as well. But yeah, as far as lessons learned, the one thing was, when you talk to someone and they say, I'm into polyamory or open relating, or I'm open for that, it doesn't necessarily mean anything, which is why I think the phrase polyamory or open relationship is not very useful, because it's another label. We talked about how marriage is perhaps a dangerous label, but using this label, what happened was, we were talking to a counselor after some time trying to mediate and maybe stay together. And I said, well, when we were together, I mentioned, hey, I'm interested in perhaps connecting with other people. And you said you were okay with that. And her reply was, I meant I was okay with that, but I would leave. Which was a lot different. Yeah. Which was a lot different explanation than I would be okay with that, right? So here I was thinking I communicated clearly and we created an agreement, but in reality, we were still on completely separate pages. And
yeah,
so
you kind
that,
have
was,
to
that
define,
was something for
yeah,
me to...
Have to, yeah, you kind of have to define the terms, don't you? It makes me think of what Reid Mahalko talks about as dating your own species, like being in an open relationship can mean so many different things to people. You could just be a pure swinger, or you could practice exclusive polyamory where you just have a triad or four people where they're only together and nobody from the outside comes in, and everything in between. So it's important to start to really define the terms, and the more communication, the better.
Right. And, of course, I thought I had done that. I thought I'd established it. She told me her history, and it sounded like, okay, well, she seems to be doing things as I wish I could do them. But like I said, things changed either with the legal status, or we hadn't talked enough, or obviously we didn't spend a ton of time together beforehand, before actually diving into a deeper connection. And, these things become so important. And it's really hard. Even if someone agrees or feels like they're the same species, until they're in the situation, they kind of don't know what they'll do, and you don't know what they'll do either. So there is always that element of risk, no matter what your theory is about what you think would be good.
Mm-hmm. And so what would you recommend to people? What would you recommend to someone who they have a lot of conversation and they think that they both want to practice open relationship in the same way, but then when it comes down to it, let's say one person likes to have separate dyads and the other person likes to lean in and get really, maybe not necessarily sexual, but maybe wants to just feel like a loving family with their partner's other sweeties. So when it comes down to it, there's subtle differences in how they practice it. What advice would you give to people after they're already in a committed relationship and these types of things come up?
You know, that's a great question. And I remember seeing something, and it might even have been, somewhere on Facebook, I'm going to find someone who I love dearly who will then leave me the heck alone. So there's all these maps and all of these structures about how to do things. And what I decided for myself after that was, okay, I understand a lot about sex, or at least, things were pretty amazing, things were happening sexually, but I don't understand communication. So for me, the next step of the puzzle was to start looking into NBC, which ended up being a lifesaver. Can I go into that a little bit? I think that'll answer the question.
Yes, absolutely.
So what I found was NBC, or nonviolent communication, or compassionate communication. I listened to some podcasts. I was listening to podcasts at the time, and I listened to one from Francesca Gentile, and she was actually interviewing someone, and he said, well, we have this thing called compassionate communication. And as soon as I found it, I immediately ran to my wife at that time, and I said, look, this is how you're supposed to talk to me. And so... for me, that's kind of a joke, but when you seriously find some new technique or something to improve, it's never about out there. It's never about someone else. As long as you're trying to change them or change the outside, you're going to have a real tough time. I have another friend who calls that carpeting the world, when you try to get other people to play by your rules and do the things that you want. But
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, that's one of the great things about NVC is that you can practice it even if the other person doesn't know the system.
Absolutely. And so what happened was when I finally figured out, it's not about making someone else do things differently, it's about me figuring out what it was, I watched Marshall Rosenberg's 3-hour-long training that I think he actually gave in San Francisco, like 2002 or something like that, that's on YouTube. I watched that at least once a week, every weekend for 7 months. And then I was in a new relationship and we were sort of cautiously playing with polyamory. Again, there'd been some miscommunication, and I'd done some things that had made her feel, listen to this language, I made her feel certain things because of what I did, and she made me feel certain things because of what she did. And so we were having a lot of bumps. But after the 7-month immersion, trying to figure out what this was really about and trying to get what they call NBC consciousness down, which is different than just understanding the techniques, but actually internalizing a completely different way of being and thinking about people and relationships and love and connection. we got in the car to go to a workshop. Actually, she picked me up at the airport, and we had a four-hour drive. And she was livid because of a way I had engaged with another person. And I remember on that drive, my traditional way would be to shut down, to run away, to get afraid, to start blaming. But I said, okay, I'm going to practice this. And so I said, it sounds like you're really angry because you have a need to be safe and connect, and that wasn't met. And then immediately she said, yeah, well, no one's really paid me that attention always, and it just hurts that it happens. And I said, oh, well, it sounds like you're sad. Your need to really be seen and understood hasn't been met. And she says, yeah, but really it makes me angry because this happened with the last guy too. And what happened was we started unwrapping this gift, this painful, not so fun gift when it arrived, but of her emotions. And we ended up doing that for the entire drive, about 3.5 hours. And what we found was under every single layer, there was another emotion and another need that had not been talked about. And the funny thing was, after 3.5 hours of me just basically learning to show empathy and showing empathy and her talking about her experience, all of a sudden the sun came out between us. All of a sudden there was no more rage. All of a sudden we just had this happy weekend together. And for me, that was the graduation, saying, okay, I get this, or at least I get this enough to apply this stuff in a relationship where the bombs are going off, and this is super, super powerful.
Beautiful. What an amazing story. And so this was really your first time using it after that intensive study for 7 months?
Yeah, I mean, I tried before and, whatever hadn't really worked. I hadn't really gotten it. It really took me about 7 months before I could actually use it in a relationship. Yeah.
Incredible. So let's fast forward a little bit to some later relationships where you maybe were able to practice some of the things you learned, but we're always all learning and we're always falling on our face as part of being human. So maybe you can tell us some of the more recent lessons you've learned from practicing open relationship.
Yeah, I like to tell people I've tried almost every constellation. So one thing that happened to me after that is I had 3 lovers at the same time who knew about each other, and basically I had regular schedules and we were doing the Google Calendar thing and spending time with each of them. And I had about a 7 month period where that was going. That was going really well. And I found it really satisfying on a physical level. But the interesting thing is when you look at NVC, and especially under NVC, there's something called the fundamental human needs, and it's done by Manfred Max Neefs. And there's 9 different needs. And I tell people, when you get one bucket full, then the other bucket starts making noise, or it starts being, when it's empty, it gets more attention. And so I started to see other needs that I wanted. So even though I was having this connection, I thought that there's something about community that I'm missing. There's something about belonging that's not here. And that led me on a search that took a few years, and this is getting now fairly recently, to study community. And I can talk a little bit about that if you'd like or not.
Yeah, sure. But can you please repeat? Well, first of all, for people that are interested, NVC, or nonviolent communication, was created by someone named Marshall Rosenberg. You can find that on YouTube. And then the underlying needs, I haven't heard of that. Can you repeat what that is and the name of the person?
Yeah, when you do the teacher training for nonviolent communication, and you can also find this in some of the, I think there's a 9-hour video on YouTube where he talks about this, but Manfred Max Neef is his name, and he was an economist, I think, in Brazil, and he started to look at economy not in terms of GDP, he started to look in terms of what are the needs that we're actually trying to get fulfilled by the economy. He said, someone who's barefoot doesn't care about GDP or is homeless. And so he started to look at things like love and belonging and connection and intimacy. And if you've learned NVC, and I love Marshall Rosenberg and I love NVC, but the issue for me was it took me that long to learn because it was like learning a new language. And I feel like a lot of people give up on it or never really actually have it work for them because of the complexity. And Marshall Rosenberg used to have, I think, a list of 50 or more needs. And that gets hard for people to remember. And when he found Manfred Max Neef, and we can link to all this in show notes, or you can find it on my webpage, then he found if you boil it down, you can get to basically 9 different needs, which are similar to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And a lot of people have heard about that. And then kind of figure out when you start to feel something, then, you know, is it hunger I'm feeling? Do I need nourishment? Is it loneliness I'm feeling? Do I need connection? And start to map it a little bit easier. So, and that's what I've used. What I've done myself is the system that I've created is from NVC. I've taken things and tried to make it as simple as possible so that people don't have such a long and difficult learning curve as I experienced with NVC.
Perfect. So, yeah, this is a perfect segue then to talk about community, because community is so important for our basic needs. And our Western culture, we're for the most part very isolated in our separate little boxes, and we have to get in a car and drive through heinous traffic to go connect with community. And community is also super important for people practicing alternative relationship styles, because we don't have a book to follow. So there's a lot of books out there, but we don't have a rule book that we grew up with. So it's so important. So important to go out and be with other people that are practicing different styles and to not feel like you're all alone. So please tell us more about what you're doing with community.
Absolutely, Sumati. And this is exactly what I found. When I talk about systems, when you start working on your relationship stuff, it's connected to everything else in your life. And you can't just say, I'm going to do relationships differently. You know, if all of a sudden I'm in my stringent religious environment and I say, now we're going to have a multiple connection relating, you know, I'm not going to be able to do that. Everything's connected in our life. And so that's, you asked me a little bit about what are you doing now, or why is it, you know, why are you losing this focus? And the problem is everything's connected. So in order to handle anything, whether it's finances or love or health, you're going to touch everything else. So you have to kind of become a bit of a generalist. And that's what led me to the community. And I can just go through the human needs. The list is just subsistence, protection, affection, understanding, participation, leisure, creation, identity, and freedom. And there's a lot to say about all those. But that you can find out on Wikipedia. It will have the link. But, yeah, because I found everything was connected, I said, okay, now I have, you know, even if I have the perfect lover and we have the perfect agreement, How are we going to respond in the wider community? How do we connect to others? Do we have to hide? Do we have to be in some little city in southern Utah where no one knows we're doing what we're doing? Or is there the possibility to connect? And so I came back to America after 15 years in Europe at about that time, and I visited a place called Ganas, which is in New York City. I think it's one of the longest non-spiritual, non-religiously based, let's say, intentional communities in New York City. I looked at Morehouse. I talked to and listened to people from Tamara, which I think you're familiar with also.
Yes, in Portugal, right?
One Taste. And right, exactly. And all of these different places that deal with relationships and talk about them in alternative ways, and really have created a map of, for myself, what could community look like, what should community look like, and that's complex and maybe outside the scope of what we're talking about now. But I think that you and I are experiencing a time where everyone is going to find their tribes that work for them, or multiple tribes that work for them with different rules and different values, and that we're going to have a return to community. And the reason.
Sorry, I was just going to butt in here for a second and say that there's an article that's been going around on the internet for a while where they've discovered the cure for addiction drug addiction, alcoholism is not what you think. It's connection and community. And that's the reason why AA works so well, because it's very, very community-based.
Awesome. Yeah, exactly. I look at addiction, I look at compulsions much differently since I've studied NBC and since I've studied compassionate communication, all of these topics. Right now, we live in a world where there's more single households than ever before, more people living alone than ever before. They may have more money, but they have fewer connections, less community, more single people. And when we are one of our needs is participation, connection. And if that's not getting met in a broader way, there's all sorts of ways that we try to compensate. And so figuring out how to create that connection and that community and that tribe is, I think, just as important as figuring out your love style or how you want to be open.
Right. So how do you work with clients now that you've kind of come full circle and realized, because when I first met you, you were more of a business coach, I think, helping people who were themselves sexuality coaches, and you were helping them to be able to promote their businesses. And you seem to have come full circle now where you're more of a spiritual teacher or just a general guide. So how do you work with clients nowadays?
Well, you know, here's my life. I'm a weird person and I do things differently, but the way I do things is I go around and I learn something. And after a while, I start to share it, and then I go to something else, and then I'll come back to that first thing and go deeper. And so what you experienced is when I showed up in the Bay Area, in Germany and in Austria, when I was working, I was basically teaching Tantra, working with relationships, and I knew the little bit I knew about Tantra, but I hadn't been doing very much, but I was doing well and I was having clients. But when I came to the Bay Area, and that felt like a divinely guided thing. I wasn't planning on it, but I just sort of landed in San Francisco one day with two suitcases and no place to live, and figured it out and stayed there for almost 5 years. When I came to the Bay Area, there was so much happening in these areas. It felt like there were so many names, there were so many teachers, there were so many people sharing that I didn't know how to get attention. I didn't know how to connect to people and start having clients and making enough money to live in this very expensive area. And so I started learning the business and marketing stuff. And as is my habit and what happens when I start learning something, I start sharing it and seeing who else needs it. And so I really dove in deeply to that for a few years to understand, okay, how do we communicate about this stuff in a way that people see the value in their lives, and that they see the investment and time and energy required, and that they actually spend that and come and have this transformation that is so valuable that we're excited about. But that doesn't answer your question, mm-hmm. but I can answer your question right now. And the answer to the question now is I've been trying to find how do we give these answers and allow these or enable these researches and depths of jumping in and transformation that people are looking for without it needing to cost thousands of dollars with a one-on-one coach. Because if you're working one-on-one, you have to take a certain amount of money to have a life and a lifestyle. And so I've developed a system where for as little as $24 a month, people can have access to everything I've ever learned and a few minutes of my time to talk and get information. I use a messaging system for that. And then they're able to go at their own speed and figure out this stuff and have the transformation. That might take months or years to just be honest about it and do it in community. So, you know, I'm working with those things right now and they seem to be working well, and I'm excited about how that happens.
Beautiful. So I want to ask you, did you ever get to have four lovers at once?
I got to three, and three was pretty impressive. and I would say now, I mean, the way things are now, and pretty fun, but the way things are now, man, the way I interact and the way I connect to people, I, it, it's in so many levels and in so many layers. I mean, there's a lot of energetics happening with me now that, you know, you can either say I always have that or I never do, depending on how you want to define it.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you. Well, Ryan, I want to thank you so much for your transparency and your vulnerability and sharing your story with us. I'm really inspired by you and all that you've been through and the systems you've created from your own mistakes. And I'm really excited about what you're creating, where it's kind of a monthly membership type thing where people can participate at whatever level they can afford. And you are so good at creating systems and creating material for people to consume that you found a way to put that all in one place for people to draw whatever parts they need for their journey. I believe you're really focusing on people going at their own pace as well, right?
Well, yeah, because, you know, to be honest, I've been in a bunch of programs where they say, give me $2,000 and in 8 months you'll be an expert at, could be anything, relationship, sexuality, internet marketing, whatever. And the truth is any true transformation or learning takes a lot longer than that, you know, and they assume that you're going to be able to do it full time. I tried a men's program last year, and the program was going to be pretty expensive, a couple thousand dollars. And what I noticed is most men who have jobs and they're working and they're busy, I have really quit my job 9 years ago, and I've done this full time since then. And very few people can do that. So my expectations for them were pretty high. And then I realized how little time people have, and I said, I have to create something that enables them to go at their own speed and learn one simple thing at a time and practice it for a few weeks and then continue. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you have material for people who want to learn how to build their businesses as well as for people that want better relationships, better spiritual connection, kind of just about everything in life. Is that true?
You know, it's the stuff about life that I didn't get any answers or really effective training for when I was growing up. It's what I wish I would have gotten. So those are the things that I'm, I know the word seems not so a little bit strange here, but focusing on. But yeah, for me, spirituality is something that calls to me over and over. God is always there, and I always end up coming back when things get tough or I lose my way and say, oh, that's the core, that's the foundation for me. And so I teach a lot and share about that. I also share about emotional healing, because unless we become emotionally healed ourselves, it gets really hard to interact with others. So all of that I put out, that's available for free, all of those levels and all that content. And then relationships and sexuality is the next thing. And then, yes, I'm passionate about helping people who work with people on relationships and sexuality. And I share everything I know, everything I learn, and help them also on their journey. So those are the main focuses right now. And there's more after that, but that's enough.
Yeah. And I remember a couple years ago, you saying to me something like, I've pretty much mastered internet marketing. And I thought, wow, that's quite a statement to own that and claim that you've mastered internet marketing. So I was very impressed with that.
Well, that sounds funny, and I'm sure I wouldn't say that now, but like the basics, the principles of understanding how to connect to people. I mean, I understand if I have a marketing program or a coaching program, I understand the process of lead generation and then filtering and then lead conversion, delivering. Like, I understand all of that. I understand the basics of that. I spent a few years doing it. I did it for other people, and I know how it works. That's what I mean. And really, once you understand the principles behind any given area of human activity, then the specifics are just a new tool, a new technology, and that's not that difficult to learn. But to learn those basics, you have to put in your hours, you have to take your time, and yeah.
And go at your own pace, of course.
Yeah, and sometimes it takes, I mean, I say it takes me 2 to 3 years to learn a new thing. And basically everything that I'm teaching now, I've been doing at least 3 years plus. So those are the things that I feel okay sharing about and helping people with. And also realizing that a lot of the answers are inside us. The thing that I'm doing now, it's not anything anyone taught me. The way I'm presenting it, I think this is the first time it's been done this way, period. I'm just going to say that. But the way it came about was me going deeper and deeper inside and listening to who I was. And so I'm more about encouraging people to follow their voice and develop their virtues and their courage and their strengths and their love and compassion, and just letting that show. That is going to be the thing that gives you success in every level. And the techniques and the technologies, they give you a context to talk about it. But really, this life is about becoming yourself and becoming your best self. And only you know how that is. So I want us to be in community and have friends and then support that process. And that's more and more where I feel myself called at the moment.
Beautiful. It took us almost a whole hour to get to that distillation, but that was my favorite thing that you said the whole time.
Wonderful.
Why don't we take this opportunity for you to take a couple minutes to let people know how they can find you if they're interested in working with you. And I believe you said you have programs starting as low as $24 a month. And also, I believe you have a gift for our listeners.
Absolutely. I really appreciate if you've listened to this, and I appreciate Sumati for inviting me. And just look for Ryan Orok. It's a very unusual name. So Ryan Orok, O-R-R-O-C-K. Just Google that. You find my website. Just you can find more information about me there. And as far as the gift, I've created a page, ryanorok.com/free. And if you listen to this and you go sign up under ryanorok.com/free, then you'll receive a free coupon to my perfect relating system, which is my version of nonviolent communication and some other stuff thrown in there, non-duality and meditation and things to help us have better relationships. And you just get a free coupon to it. I think it's listed at $200 on Udemy right now, which is an online learning platform, but you'll just get that. And then if you want to dive in deeper after you get on, just put in your email there, you're going to find more information coming to you about all the rest of the stuff that's going on, including the monthly programs or working with me one-on-one, which is still possible, but not as much. Not as many people are participating in that now. So thank you very much.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for that generous offer. And I hope everybody will go to your website and see what you're offering, because it's very unique and just full of so much content. So, and you clearly have the wisdom and the systems for delivering it to other people. So thank you so much for being on the show, Ryan. I hope you'll come back in the future when maybe you have some other iteration of your work.
Thank you so much for taking this time. I really appreciate spending time with you, and this has been really neat.
Okay, Ryan, good luck to you. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.